This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Another GOP debate, and boy, did CNBC try to get cutesy with those questions. We can get cutesy, too. But what did we learn?
Donald.
Got a gun.
I have a permit.
Donald Trump.
Got a gun.
Mr. Trump.
Donald Trump.
Mr. Trump.
The whole world's come undone.
Permit to carry.
Mr. Donald Trump. Donald.
Got a gun.
And I do carry on occasion, sometimes a lot, but I like to be unpredictable so that people don't know exactly what you're carrying.
That's right. We learned that Donald Trump has a gun, but how this is relevant for someone who wants to be commander-in-chief and will get a Secret Service detail, his own Marine detail, a Navy and an Army and an Air Force as part of the job is a bit of a puzzle. Nate Silver tweeted it was relevant from 538. He said, Trump would have shot baby Hitler. Okay. We learned that Ben Carson wants people to believe he's reasonable on the legally decided issue of same-sex marriage.
I believe that our Constitution protects everybody, regardless of their sexual orientation or any other aspect. I also believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that there is no reason that you can't be perfectly fair to the gay community. They shouldn't automatically assume that because you believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, that you are a homophobe.
A tweet from political scientist Ian Bremmer, Carson 16, all the crazy, none of the excitement. Well, maybe not all the crazy. Even we learned that Ted Cruz evoked gold standard advocate and former presidential candidate Ron Paul.
I've got deep concerns about the Fed. The first thing I think we need to do is audit the Fed. And I am an original co-sponsor of Ron Paul's audit the Fed legislation.
But Cruz got a lot of attention last night. He focused on the middle class and jobs and motivated this tweet from Heidi N. Moore from Mashable. Ted Cruz is talking about working women. I feel a migraine coming on. Ted Cruz really got folks going when he took on CNBC's questioners.
This is not a cage match. And you look at the questions. Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about?
Neil Irwin, economic correspondent for the New York Times, tweeted, wait, am I correct that there has been a daily fantasy sports regulation question, but not a Wall Street regulation question? This was exactly what had New Jersey Governor Chris Christie fuming.
We have $19 trillion in debt. We have people out of work. We have ISIS and Al-Qaeda attacking us. And we're talking about fantasy football? Can we stop?
Brian Stelter from CNN. CNBC is using its debate like NBC uses Super Bowls by running one of its big primetime shows afterward, hoping to intro it to new viewers. We also learned during the debate that the two candidates from Florida, Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush, do not really get along.
But Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job.
Well, let me tell you, I don't remember you ever complaining about John McCain's vote record. The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position, and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Well, I've been.
Here's the bottom line. My campaign is going to be about the future of America. It's not going to be about attacking anyone else on this stage.
Conservative commentator Michelle Malkin tweeted, good riddance, Jeb Bush. Yikes. Matt Drudge, who very rarely tweets, tweeted this about the former governor from Florida. Jeb Bush can eat carbs now. And to conclude, we learned that John Kasich loves his resume.
Well, I mean, right here, to talk about we're just going to have a 10% tithe and that's how we're going to fund the government, and we're going to just fix everything with waste, fraud, and abuse, or that we're just going to be great, or we're going to ship 10 million Americans or 10 million people out of this country, leaving their children here in this country and dividing families. Folks, we got to wake up. We cannot elect somebody that doesn't know how to do the job. You got to pick somebody who has experience.
We learned that Mixed Record CEO Carly Fiorina likes capitalism. It's just crony capitalism she hates.
Crony capitalism is alive and well and has been so in Washington, D.C. for decades. What's crony capitalism? Crony capitalism is what happens when government gets so big and so powerful that only the big and the powerful can handle it.
To which Jason Mustian, CEO of Distractify, tweeted, you could caption literally any picture of Carly Fiorina with, quote, I want to speak to the manager. Well, what did we really learn? Jacqueline Lyon is a junior at the University of Colorado Boulder and a member of the debate team. Welcome, Jacqueline.
Hi.
What was the spirit, the feeling on campus during the debate or during the lead up to the debate?
There was definitely some protests, though we actually thought there'd be more than there was. It became a little lackluster as the day went on. There's a lot of police officers around. Traffic was terrible.
Well, Boulder's a very Democratic city in a mixed state, Colorado. It wasn't necessarily friendly territory there. But you, how would you describe yourself politically?
I'm definitely an independent, so I like to see myself somewhere a little in between.
And they didn't exactly allow lots and lots of students into the debate itself. How did you feel about that?
We were all pretty angry. They only initially allowed 50 tickets to the whole campus, and that just seemed a little unfair to us.
And you wanted one, right?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. All right, what was your impression of the debate as you watched it on the screen?
I thought there was something sloppy about it. Even I thought there was some gotcha questions in there.
And when you're judged as a debater, it's for organization and clarity, and it seems like people sort of talking over each other doesn't exactly give you a lot of organization and clarity there. What about use of argument? Did anyone have a good argument to support their position?
Well, I was rating them. They kept a theme going on because they kept repeating themselves. But in debate, we wouldn't like that necessarily. But I think in their type, they just wanted to get their points across.
What about cross-examination and when the candidates interacted with each other?
Interaction. Out of all of them, Marco Rubio, I think, used his rebuttal time the best. I mean, a lot of people were talking about how Jeb Bush went after him, and he defended himself about the newspaper article.
The bit about his voting record, that was an editorial in a local paper, and Jeb Bush critiqued him about it. We heard that earlier this hour, and you think that Rubio defended himself pretty well.
Yes, I think he knew it was going to come up, so he was definitely prepared to rebuttal it, but he did it, I think, very efficiently.
And were you as outraged about the questioners as a lot of the candidates were, that they were focusing on silly things like fantasy football and not on the significant issues, particularly financial issues?
I definitely thought that it could have gone much better. I didn't remember rolling my eyes when they asked about fantasy football.
What's your evaluation of what the media has described and the polling data seems to support as the front runners, Dr. Ben Carson and Donald Trump, who got, Trump got a certain amount of attention last night. Ben Carson didn't speak all that much last night. What did you think?
I think they were definitely actually some of the more weaker players during the debate. They weren't very talkative. I didn't think Carson responded very well to some of his questions or the other candidates.
What about Trump?
Well, I didn't think he sounded very, very good, especially on taxes.
Now, it sounds like you took some pretty detailed notes there. I can hear you flipping through some pages.
Okay.
Could you just read me the notes you put under Kasich?
I said, I think he repeats about Ohio too much. In debate, we would call this putting his eggs all in one basket or not diversifying his arguments. Because if you put an alternate explanation forward, like what Trump did, how Ohio is doing well because of fracking or luck or just something other than him, then it pokes a lot of holes in his arguments and he doesn't have a lot of stand on.
What about Chris Christie of New Jersey? What do your notes say about Christie?
I thought he was to the point. I think he kind of shunned when he was against the media. I think his supporters are going to like his performance, but other than that, it wasn't too memorable, I thought.
So in terms of the way you are judged in your debates, he did well in presentation style, which is one category.
Well, I think it would depend on who's judging. They like it for clarity, but maybe, you know, some judges don't like if you're really passionate or expressive. They like more calm tones and more level-headed.
Is your page blank for Jeb Bush? Because he certainly didn't get a lot of good response last night.
That's basically what it says. It says, I wrote that he was flat and he didn't really stand out the way he needed to. And he's still not, you know, he needs to come off, I think, as more personable. And he just doesn't seem that way.
So the Jacqueline Lyon Notes Index would give this debate, it sounds like, to Rubio. Read some of your notes from Marco Rubio.
I wrote down that I did like his points about vocational training. I thought that made him stand out from a lot of the other proposals going forward. He looked at the camera and he had a strong presence when he was talking. He kept up with his theme. He's been having this throughout the other debates as well about his immigrant family and, you know, rising to the middle class. I gave him a lower score on arguments.
All right.
I think that he didn't really have anything concrete. He had some points that stood out, but I still think that it was mostly in his rebuttal times and his strength of his presence that really made him stand out.
All right. Well, since you mentioned concrete, let me give you a clip from Trump talking about something that he's focused on a lot during the campaign. Since you did a lot of notes on Trump, give me a critique of this statement from Donald Trump.
We can do a wall. We're going to have a big, fat, beautiful door right in the middle of the wall. We're going to have people come in, but they're coming in legally. And Mexico's going to pay for the wall because Mexico, I love the Mexican people. I respect the Mexican leaders, but the leaders are much sharper, smarter, and more cunning than our leaders. And just to finish, people say, oh, how are you going to get Mexico to pay? A politician, other than the people on this stage, I don't want to insult, a politician cannot get them to pay. I can.
What did you think of that?
I mean, if he was debating, he would lose because it's just all flair. It doesn't really say how clever the Mexican politicians, like what exactly they're doing. People wouldn't see it as very realistic. I mean, people are already making this argument, but definitely in a debate sphere, you got to be specific, have concrete policies that don't really sound like they're conspiracy theories.
Or complete fantasy. Why do you think Trump embraces this kind of an argument? Why do politicians embrace things that just are literally not real when they face, debate audiences like this?
Well, we've been talking about this on campus somewhat. I think it's just, it shows a lot of outrage against the establishment. Some people they want something different because they just don't see politicians doing anything so far. So they really turn to these outliers, which are just frankly making a lot of stuff up.
So the outliers are what the voters want, and because they're outliers, they can sort of say anything. It's kind of the position we're in right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a pretty good analysis, Jacqueline. Thanks so much. Have you made up your mind who you're going to vote for yet?
I'm still a little on the fence. I think Hillary is looking the most moderate and reasonable to me so far.
All right. Well, we'll check with you later on in the campaign.
All right. Thank you.
Jacqueline Lyon is a junior at the University of Colorado Boulder and a member of the Colorado debate team.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.